Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're going to take a look at the issue of lead paint. This is a first in a series of conversations that we want to have here about lead paint, the clinical, medical, social, political, racial implications of lead paint poisoning, and that's still going on. And what we end up doing about it. And so I think it's a subject that has really made some gains, but really has been ignored in terms of the lives of people like the two people who have recently died in confrontations with the police, and including Corin Gaines, who was poisoned by lead, even though that she was poisoned by lead, and of course Freddie Gray was also poisoned by lead, as are thousands and thousands and thousands of children in the city of Baltimore. We're joined here by Brenton Mock, staff writer for CityLab.com. Brenton, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Dr. David Rosner is professor of public health and history at Columbia University, author of Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children. David Rosner, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Ruth Ann Norton, President and CEO of Green and Healthy Homes Initiative, who's been working around lead paint issues for as long as I've known her. So good to have you in the studio.
Good morning. And good morning, David and Brenton.
Good morning. Nice to be on the same show with you.
Absolutely.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us, talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So one of the things, just to begin, I mean, I think that we always talk about the great strides that have been made, but the depth of what's really going on here is really severe. When I think of the two cases I mentioned, when I think of a number has been used in the show a lot. Let me ask this number very quickly. A number has been used in the show a lot that between 1993 and now, that perhaps 65,000 people in the city have been poisoned by lead.
I'd go much different than that. I think at what we know and where we finally got the federal government to admit in 2012 that there's no safe level of lead. If you look at kids with levels above 2 micrograms per deciliter, where neurological impacts start to happen, in 1993 alone, there were probably 40,000 plus kids being poisoned by lead every year.
Here in Baltimore.
Wait,
did you say 40,000 a year?
Who had elevated levels at what we now know is anything above zero, right? Back in 1993, and we were tracking kids at 10 micrograms per deciliter. We were 12,000, 13,000 kids a year. What we know is that multiplier is 3 to 4 times when we look at levels 5 and above. We have had massive progress on lead poisoning, but this is a toxic legacy that we look at Ms. Gaines, we look at Mr. Gray, and we should look in the eyes of the thousands of kids that live in this city and around the country today, that the poor housing condition that we allowed to happen, the influence of lobbyists to continue to use lead-based paint, the previous, failure to have standards in communities, have robbed children of their not only their ability to read well, but their ability to comport themselves in ways that we saw in the videos from Corin Gaines, where things just didn't make sense because there is serious issues going on neurologically that develop and make it difficult to get through life. And if we don't have a point in consciousness in this country now to address housing condition as health, educational, and social outcomes for equity and equality, then I don't know when we're going to do it. But now is the time to act.
I'd just like to add in.
This is David Rosner. David, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Very briefly, that from my point of view, reading the history of this whole issue, that this is perhaps the longest lasting and longest evolving childhood epidemic in American history. And we've known literally from the early 1900s that lead is a neurotoxin, that it damages children, that it's caused by exposure of children to paint and to pipes and to gasoline. We've known all these issues and we've documented it. That in 2017, we're still in some sense, debating whether we should be doing something about this, whether we should be concerned about it, is kind of shocking and stunning to me as a historian. This is the best documented environmental toxin in American history.
And Brent and Mark, you've been covering this issue pretty intensely as well. And I, you know, when you heard Corinne Gaines' father speak the other day, and he spoke about her lead poisoning, and you can you sensed you, and he spoke, I think, for many thousands and thousands of people who really feel this is part of a war against people of color, a war against black children, a war against black people. And maybe in some senses that's why it's not taken as seriously as it needs to be taken.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree. I mean, I think, I mean, this is the essential message behind Black Lives Matter, right? I mean, if Black lives actually mattered, then all types of institutions would rush to ensure that no black child ever grew up in a house that was saturated with toxic lead or was exposed to toxic lead in any situation, whether it's school or the playground. And I think that we all get the sense that that certainly is the case in, you know, neighborhoods that are predominantly white, white schools, white playgrounds, parks. And so, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, you definitely get the sense that that not only is it just a matter of neglect, but that there is specific, that there can be a specific, it can feel like, you know, like there's a specific target on black children, on not wanting them to develop, not wanting them to prosper or anything.
Go ahead.
I just think it's I think what we've allowed to happen in this country around the issue of lead poisoning is criminal. It's criminal, and I absolutely believe that it's deeply embedded in race, it's deeply embedded in dismissiveness of people in poverty. And I think one thing that is that white communities and others don't really get, it is an us too problem. It's an us too problem because by ghettoizing this issue over time, we have lost our moral compass for children of color and children coming out of low-income communities. But by doing it, we've also left millions of white children and Hispanic children and Asian children who have also been poisoned because we wanted to put our heads in the sand and not deal with low-income communities and housing condition. So everybody suffers, and we all suffer in terms of taxpayer dollars, in terms of loss of opportunity of what a child who is poisoned by lead could have otherwise become. We have robbed ourselves of that, but I think there is way too much knowledge. And the one absolutely imperative to understand about lead is it's fixable, it's preventable, it's a high, there's a strong business case to do it. For every dollar invested, the studies have shown up to $221 return to taxpayers. We're going to have kids performing better in school. We're going to have lower crime. We're going to have increased IQs. And the bottom line is we have to say, are we willing to declare war on lead poisoning and put an audacious goal out? Look, you know, going to the moon, super. Clean economy, the clean energy, absolutely 100% behind that. This is doable, as is those others. This is doable. We need to put a marker on it. We need to declare for 5 years we're going to invest the money that is needed because everyone benefits.
We've already seen the Republican-held Congress took $35 million out of giving to communities to deal with lead pain. But you were about to say something, David. I want to ask
you a question. Well, they put more in this year, but not enough.
Yeah, I was just going to add on again this little historical point, which is that this is not a new discovery about the horrors of racism and its impact on children and the impact on the lead issue. You can go back into historical documents. And you can see the lead industry itself talking to themselves, saying, as long as this is defined as primarily a problem of black and well, they said Negro and Hispanic and Puerto Rican children, this is in the 50s, that the problem will continue to plague us, but we don't have to worry about it because no one will pay attention. And this is a deeply rooted racist issue that I think we understand, yes, it affects huge swaths of all of us, all our children, black and white, Hispanic, but the focus on making sure that we define this primarily as a problem of black children, and that we believe that it's only a problem of black children is played in the deepest racist aspects of our culture, and has allowed this problem just to keep on being perpetuated. What I mean by that is that the industry understood that we would see this through the lens of race and not as a problem of all of us as an American population. And they played on that, and they allowed this problem to be to continue. And they said that. They said that in the 1950s. If it's understood as primarily only a problem of this isolated group, we're going to be able to get away with this scot-free.
I mean, what you're saying, David Posner, they literally wrote that stuff and said that in their memos to each other?
They wrote private letters. Our book, we document this, but in private correspondence, they said that we have a problem, that there are huge numbers of children who are poisoned every year. We don't even know the number. But we can take solace in the fact that it's only Negro and Puerto Rican children that are primarily at risk, and that the answer to this problem is to educate that ineducable people. That's what they said. These people are ineducable, and therefore we're not going to ever be able to solve this problem until Uncle Sam knocks down all the housing, and that'll never happen. So what they were saying is that they had written off this population, and this is in the 1950s, they wrote off this population and the problem as being not a problem of the industry which sold this paint, which put this paint on the wall, that marketed this paint for half a century, but it was a problem because you couldn't educate this ineducable population to stop having their children crawl on floors and put their hands in their mouth. That's how cynical it was. Mm. And they said that as long as that was the case, and as long as that people understood it as a problem of the population itself, of the African American and the Hispanic population itself, not a problem of all of us, we would be able to continue to market this material and continue to put it into our environment. And we're still suffering from it today. But it was a very cynical and horrible, planned epidemic in some sense, based upon their need to put this material out there and to sell it and to make a profit from it.
Well, let's, yeah.
So Brent, no, that's fine, David. I'm glad you said everything you just said. I mean, I wasn't going to stop you. And Brent and I, just, there are a couple of things here I'd really like to explore. One has to do with a really kind of social political question on two levels, and another has to do with education. And also open the phones for our listeners to get into this conversation. But Brent, one of the things I noticed around when Corin Gaines being killed by the police, it was a real battle over saying, don't blame this on lead, in which I understand.
Right.
The political level of why people say, this was for a traffic ticket, you're gonna break down somebody's door and come into our house, and if they, when they just a week before in Pikesville, which is another neighborhood here, where it was a white man who was acting completely crazy, they talked him out of it and took him home out of his house rather than shoot and kill him. But yet this young one was killed. So there's that whole political level to it. But then it also does a disservice and a danger, seems to me, Brenton, when you tie that in and ignore what we did to her as a society by poisoning her with these massive amounts of lead in her body. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's just how you create that political discussion.
I don't think that you can ignore the lead in the fuller context. I mean, I can understand people not wanting to create a causation narrative between the lead and what transpired on August first or second, when police, shot her. I mean, the police, they should be held accountable for what they did in terms of the direct violence that they did to her on that day. But what happened to her on that day comes within the fuller context of what was happening to her on the many other days before that shooting happened, where her life was already in risk, already in danger, where her life expectancy was already compromised because of her exposure to lead poisoning, where her quality of life, quite frankly, was compromised because of her exposure to lead. And so when we talk about Black Lives Matter, we talk about that in the fullest context. It's not just Black Lives Matter, and that point needs to be made because police are shooting Black people, but the message is being sent to all institutions. It's the companies that created the lead, the agencies that allowed that lead to be applied in houses where Black people lived, the policies that kept Black people in those neighborhoods and in those homes where they knew that toxic lead was saturated. This is what is meant by Black Lives Matter. You have to look at it in that full context.
Right. In the full scope of
quick, we have to get a short break.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to add on to that. I mean, we cause neurological brain damage very early, wiping out, you know, knocking the knees out from under kids, 7 times more likely to drop out of school, unable to read at grade level reading, 46% early mortality. Because of the 46% higher risk of early mortality because of lead poisoning, not to mention long-term hypertension, not to mention the inability to have proper socialization and higher rates of aggressive and violent behavior. And we know this, and we continue to trap communities in it, and we have the ability, which I want to talk about, which is we have the ability to solve this and get on this because the quality of the full spectrum of life does matter. It doesn't excuse any bad behavior by police, but you wonder if Corinne Gaines or Freddie Gray would have been at a different place with different opportunities at the moment they met their death, and that we need to think about trajectory for kids and equality and opportunities, and we will never do it if we don't solve for the issue of lead poisoning in this country.
So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds to continue our conversation. Go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Donna, you're the first caller up. Come back with very specific questions about how we resolve this and the question I've been asking people for 23 years here on the air, 24 years, about educating our children who are poisoned. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Stein as we continue our conversation about lead paint poisoning in our world and in our city, what we can do about it, why it's here. And we did have to truncate a little today because of the DOJ report that came out. I apologize for that. We're going to come back with more conversations about lead in the coming weeks and months as well. We're here with Dr. David Rosner, professor of public health and history at Columbia University, author of Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children. Brendan Mock, who's a staff writer for CityLab.com, who's been covering this issue. Ruth Ann Norton, president and CEO of Green and Healthy Homes Initiative, and you all at 410-319-8888. As I promised, let me go right to the phones. And Donna, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing?
Very well. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your guests. State of Maryland, Department of the Environment, has already enforced or notified residents whose houses were built before the 1970s to, you know, list their properties as a rental and then have it tested before opt out if your house is not a rental. I discovered, because I have family members that just moved to Baltimore who wants to rent out, that although these owners had listed and maybe got their first certificate saying that the house was lead-free after they, you know, did some work.
Mm-hmm.
Those certificates are old and outdated, and the property owners, I found, are constantly moving people in and out. So there's been a lack of education notifying the property owners that even though you had your certificate 7 years ago, if people coming in and out, you still have to have yourself your place recertified and tested again. So there's no way we want to tackle lead paint poisoning in our communities, not just poor, because these are owners who live out of state or whatever. We have to constantly check these certificates to make sure owners are adhering to it when they're running out. I just reported three owners in my neighborhood who, and I checked, and they did not have certificates at all, and I reported them. Just renovate the house and move children in. This is a middle-class neighborhood. So, I mean, I wanted to get to talk about their interaction with the Department of the Environment and monitoring these certificates, where owners have to maintain their properties when it's being rented out, every time a person comes and rents out their property. And I'll hang up the list. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Donna, thank you for that. And if I can, I just want to say that any of those owners, if they want to contact us at 410-534-6447, we will assist both the renters and the owners on compliance with the law and making sure that happens, that this is critical. In Maryland, pre-1978 rental properties must clean up lead hazards and have them tested for leaded dust and risk assessed before renting. The difficulty has been recently that there have been certificates rendered saying that properties are lead-free, and there's been found some fraud in some of those certificates by those inspectors. So MDE is looking at that, and there's a lot of public scrutiny. But it is critical to have this public education. Donna is correct. We do a lot of that. We would love for community organizations, homeowners, property owners, and any type of organization to invite us in to do this education. We have a legal services team that works on compliance. But it is the Maryland law, and it is what has resulted in a 98% reduction in reported childhood lead poisoning
reported,
in the state.
That's an important word.
Right. Reported, because we need to test children. The one good thing that Larry Hogan has done is to expand universal testing for all children. Outside of Baltimore City, one point that Donna makes about these are middle-class properties. The profile of a lead-poisoned child outside of Baltimore City is coming out of a middle-class homeowner-occupied property. But I want people to understand that even with all the work that has been done, there is more to be done on enforcement. We still have 2,004 children going into Baltimore City schools and to schools across the state every year with levels above 5. And we know that levels as low as 2 to 7 can be the most aggressive impact on neurological development for kids. And prevention is the only way out of this, the only way.
So there are two points here. I mean, let me just come back to are the kids that have been affected by lead. And I've asked this question of everybody from Nancy Grasmick to every who is this, the head of schools, was the head of schools for the state of Maryland, superintendent, to every school director in Baltimore City and Baltimore County over the last 24 years in the radio here. What do we do pedagogically? What plans are there to help children, to work with children who have been damaged by lead so they can at least have a modicum of an existence and for themselves, their families, and society? I mean, so David Posner, I mean, and it seems to me no one has an answer. No one has, has an answer for that.
Well, you're absolutely right. Lead poisoning causes permanent neurological damage. So what's required is real attention to these kids. Certainly certain aspects of dyslexia and learning disabilities can be compensated for, but the damage is done. So what Ruth was pointing out is this has to be prevented. I mean, that has to be our focus. Now, my concern is that this is all being left to the cities and the states and the federal government, and that the people who have really been left out of this equation, who should be held accountable at both financially and morally, is an industry that sold this material to us and put us in this situation. But yes, we have to get some, as in what happened in Rhode Island and what's happened in California, where the courts have come down and said this industry has to pay for some of this. They have to pay for the special ed. They have to pay for the detoxification of homes. They should be doing this. In Rhode Island, the case was overturned by the Rhode Island Supreme Court after almost a $4 billion decision. In California, we're waiting for the Supreme Court in California to make a decision about whether a $1.15 billion settlement with this industry to pay for the removal of lead in Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Oakland, and other cities we'll go forward. We're waiting and holding our breath, because this industry really has to be held accountable, and they have to be able to pay and support what has until now been left to sometimes very well-meaning public officials who are strapped for funds and who are constantly being distracted and being pointed in another direction. So, you know, I would just like to add that piece in, that we have to find the resources to both remediate the problem at the source, lead poisoning on the walls and in our water and in our ground, as well as to provide money for the special ed courses and the kinds of support services that are going to be necessary for kids who are already neurologically damaged.
Brenton Mock, let me let you jump in here. I mean, some people might argue this is you mentioned those two cases, Rhode Island and California, which are huge cases and really important. I was reading about them both this morning. It says a lot about why it may be important about who sits on the coming Supreme Court for the next generation.
Absolutely. This is critical. It is really critical, because right now the industry is trying to get the California case into federal court,
right,
because they're worried about what the state courts are going to decide, which is they're worried that the California Supreme Court will say, yes, pay that money. And so they're trying to find a free First Amendment basis for getting into federal court so that it can go up to the Supreme Court, which is, needless to say, as it was constituted up until a few months ago, obviously going to rule against the state and rule against the verdict.
Brenton?
So yes, it's very important.
Yeah, and it's important, and it's important that it goes to we're talking about funding to deal with this issue, that it is specifically for dealing with it at its source, and not that it gets tied up in something like more money going to policing for dealing with the symptoms of what happens with kids who have been exposed to lead. And we know, bringing it back to Baltimore, there is a really contentious or controversial relationship that the Baltimore Police Department has with Baltimore Public Schools. The DOJ investigation that was released today actually deals with this. It deals with both the lead issue in that investigation, in that report, and it deals with this relationship between the Baltimore School Police, where they have a contract where the Baltimore School Police are essentially, they're still just regular police officers, and they have they're authorized to exercise the full police power anywhere within the jurisdiction of the city of Baltimore, the school police are. And so if the children start to exhibit the symptoms that we know come from toxic lead exposures in these schools, and the resources are going to more policing of that, meaning arrests, possible police mishandling or brutally handling these kids who may be acting out or out of whatever frustrations or whatever is happening to them because of the toxic lead, then what we're going to find is quite frankly what led to the Baltimore uprising to begin with. As we remember, that entire uprising began because of how Baltimore School District Police were responding to children as they were leaving school.
So before we jump back in here, let me get a phone call in here, read this tweet, and then come right back to Ruth Ann, who wants to make a comment here as well. Theodore Bracey tweets in, cops who suffer from PTSD shot and kill people who suffer from LPP, lead paint poisoning. That's not good. Interesting point. 410-319-8888. Keisha, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Keisha, you're on the air.
That's not good.
Keisha?
Interesting point. 419-8888.
Keisha, could you turn down your radio if you want to make a comment? We only have a couple minutes left.
Yes, I just have a quick question, actually.
Go ahead.
So my son was diagnosed, but at the time they said that his level was only at a 1. But listening this morning, you all are saying the levels between starting at 2 are dangerous. So I'm baffled as to what to do, because I was told, this has been several years ago, he's now an adult, that his level was only at 1.
Yeah, so let me just say that there is
Ruth Ann Norton, Keisha.
Yeah, there's no safe level of lead, and I I hate to bring concern and angst, but there is no safe level of lead at all in the human body. The federal government finally admitted that in 2012 when we got the Center for Disease Control to push forward a federal policy saying there is no safe level of lead, and lowered what's called a threshold of poisoning to 5 micrograms per deciliter. I think we've done a poor job in our medical community in getting the right messaging out over the course of time. There are extraordinarily good doctors who care about this. But if there's any source of lead, we need to remove kids from that. At this time, I mean, you know, it's harder to deal with the post effects of lead poisoning than it is to deal with the prevention. But any medical professional should be clear that there's no safe level of lead, and we should be looking at the connection to community resources on this. And I know we want Mark to move forward, but I want to make sure that people understand we have a strategy for ending lead poisoning in the next 5 years. And so at the end of this call, if people want to contact us and talk about it, we need every person to join this war on lead poisoning.
And we will come back to this in the coming week and ask the same guest to come back with another guest who we wanted to have on today with us as well to really explore this. We don't have time for this now, but Tahir Amakhti tweeted in, fraudulent lead inspections, ? That is an issue here in the state that they're investigating. We'll talk more about that when we come back to this topic in the coming week. I just also want to say that we do want to hear about this 5-year plan. I think it's really critically important to get that on the table and understand that. But and I'm sure this conversation was shortened today because of the DOJ report. I apologize for that. We're going to definitely come back to it. I want to thank first Dr. David Rosner again, the author of Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children, an incredibly powerful book. And for the work you do, David Rosner, to be at the front end of making the nation wake up, thanks so much for taking your time. I hope you'll come back with us again for a longer conversation.
I would just like to say what a pleasure it is to be on the same show with both of your guests, but particularly Ruth Ann Norton, who is a godsend for this whole issue. She's been on the front line of addressing this issue for decades, and I'm really honored to be on it.
I agree with that. Ruth Ann was on here in the 90s talking about lead paint when I first on the air in 1993, one of our first guests that year. So
yeah, David has rendered me speechless. So because back at you, David.
And that's Ruth Ann Norton, president and CEO of Green and Healthy Homes Initiative. Brenton Mock, staff writer for CityLab.com, incredibly great reporter and investigative reporter. And Brenton, you're doing a piece on DOJ coming up. Is that right?
It is up. It is up on CityLab.com.
It's up now? Okay, we'll check that out. Maybe we'll have you back to talk about that during our DOJ conversations coming up the next several days as well.
Okay. Thanks for having me on today, though.
I appreciate it. Good having you with us, Brent, as always. Thank you all three so much.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Brittany Oliver, who's a community activist who just came back from a group called Interfaith Peace Builders on an interesting journey. Stay with us. Don't go away.